We all miss Philip and Lori today, but maybe not as much as I do. Well, we look forward to being back because of his incredible lessons, so I hope I can be some benefit to all of us today. And thank you for those songs, Les, really good songs to encourage us today. We're in the book of Daniel today. We're going to the Old Testament. Rick talked about the benefit earlier today, about the Old Testament and the rich things that are found in it. And the book of Daniel, the setting, of course, is the captivity, the captives in Babylon. And it's full of many encouraging stories to us today. It was also, I understand, very encouraging to the Jews during the rebellious times, the Maccabean Revolt. They loved this book because it's an example of how to deal with belief in God when you're in an alien land in a terrible adversity. And it's got amazing stories, as we know. And we're just going to deal with one today about those three young men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And I know we're familiar with it, but I still think there's benefit of visiting it again and again and getting the encouragement from it. And I asked three young men of our group to help me with just reading the book, because it's a short book, chapter. It would take a little while to read the book, so we're just going to read the chapter. Daniel chapter 3, and if Brian, if you're ready, if you want to come up and read Daniel chapter 3, verses 1 through 12, we'll just read the book in its entirety, because this story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, it's good to just read it in its entirety. So let's read along chapter 3, verses 1 through 12, Daniel.
Nebuchadnezzar, the king, made an image of gold, the height of which was 60 cubits and its width 6 cubits. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar, the king, sent word to assemble the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar, the king, had set up. Then the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the rulers of the provinces were assembled for the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar, the king, had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "To you the command is given, O peoples, nations, and men of every language, that at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, bagpipe, and all kinds of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar, the king, has set up. But whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire." Therefore, at that time, when all the peoples heard the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, bagpipe, and all kinds of music, all the people, nations, and men of every language fell down and worshiped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. For this reason, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and brought charges against the Jews. They responded and said to Nebuchadnezzar the king, "O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, and bagpipe, and all kinds of music is to fall down and worship the golden image. But whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast in the midst of the furnace of blazing fire. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the administration of the province of Babylon named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have discarded you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up."
Thanks, Brian. Then the next section, Nathan, you have the next section? All right. Nathan Johnson's going to read Daniel 3, 13 through 23.
Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up? Now, if you are ready, at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the image which I have made, good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hands, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the expression on his face changed toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated. And he commanded certain mighty men of valor who were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace.
Thank you, Nick. You up for it, Zach? All right, Zach is going to finish the chapter for us. Verses 24 through 30.
Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up in haste. He declared to his counselors, "Did we not cast 3 men bound into the fire?" They answered and said to the king, "True, O king." He answered and said, "But I see 4 men unbound walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the appearance of the 4th is like a son of the gods." Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the burning fiery furnace. He declared, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the fire. And the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not had any power over the bodies of those men. The hair of their heads was not singed, their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him, and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies, rather than serve and worship any god except their own god. Therefore, I make a decree, any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb, and their houses laid in ruins, for there is no other God who is able to rescue in this way." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon.
Thank you, Zach. And whoever that was that's attached to you right there. I couldn't tell which. Thank you, all three of you. I just asked them all just a short time ago to help with that this morning. We're going to walk through this chapter shortly and some comments on it. Even if we didn't, I think the encouragement of this is so great. You know the setting here, Nebuchadnezzar, you know, the King of Kings. In the earlier chapters, Daniel had successfully translated or was able to understand the dreams that took place. There was also the occurrence where these 3 men and Daniel refused to eat the king's foods. faithfully were steadfast in that. And then we come to this chapter. And Nebuchadnezzar, I'll come back to that verse in a little bit, he chooses to create this idol. He says it's 90 feet tall, you know, covered with gold, most likely, probably not solid gold. He was a king of a huge kingdom, but most likely this was just something he did for himself. And we see the extent to which he asked all of these people to come in for this dedication of this idol. Big event. And it's like seven different layers of government. And then he has these seven different types of music that's all played simultaneously. And then he's got consequences. If you choose not to go along with what I'm asking you to do after the announcement's made, we've got something for you. And so this golden idol, he's forcing their hand, basically, all of his subjects, to choose him or to die. And they all do, we understand. Almost all, as we know. And they fall down and they worship is what their record says happened. However, there's these schemers. The record calls them Chaldeans. And we can tell, if that's the same reference to the same ones in Daniel chapter 2, they were some of these sorcerers and magicians who tried to help to interpret the dreams and were unsuccessful in doing so. However, because of Daniel's success in interpreting those dreams, these people were spared. They were they were awaiting the sword. That's what Nebuchadnezzar had said. Anyone that couldn't interpret my dream, you're going to die. They weren't very thankful, obviously, based on their behavior here in choosing to go after and to rat on them, essentially, in today's terms, and say that these three must have been ungrateful because they were put into a great position. Really crafty, the way that they framed what they said to try to incite Nebuchadnezzar to be incredibly angry. And they were very successful. Here they are. They're not serving your gods. You put them into this great position, and they're from a foreign land. So they are trying so hard to read that exact edict again, reread what the punishment was going to be. It's interesting, too, if Nebuchadnezzar really was after them, he potentially could have had someone watching them himself. But he evidently wasn't, but he would have caught them. But here are his enemies, or the enemies of the Jews, who are after them, and they are successful in incenting the king. Because his reaction is he's enraged and he's furious. And it really is a poor example of a leader, I think, Nebuchadnezzar. You know, he had earlier just claimed that God was the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, or, you know, earlier in chapter 2 after his dream was interpreted. And he knew the Jews. You know, they lived there in captivity. He knew their desire to worship one God. But he was not persuaded to do anything but to bring them, to arraign them, essentially, bring him before them. And he does give them the last chance. He says, you know, is this true? You know, he's incredulous that they would choose not to, because of the things he'd been given. He's going along with what the Chaldeans really had said to him. Why are you, you know, choosing not to do this one thing, basically to bow down? And I'm going to give you one last chance to do so. I'm going to restart the music, you know, which was to give them a chance to go along. And he also does something rather stupid. And he makes a statement. It's similar to statements we've heard in other places. You can think of the Pharaoh. When in Exodus chapter 5, He said, "Who's the Lord that I should obey his voice to let my people, let these people go?" Very, very arrogant attitude. It's risky to be in a place of power. One other example, remember Rabshakeh and Hezekiah. You know, Sennacherib had sent the armies to surround Jerusalem. And that guy, Rabshakeh, comes to the wall, says, "Who among all the gods of these lands have delivered their lands out of my hand that the Lord should deliver Jesus or should deliver the Jerusalem out of my hand?" And we know how that story ended. That's where Hezekiah laid the letter out in front of God, and 185,000 were killed overnight by the angel of God. But here is this arrogance of Nebuchadnezzar to challenge God to deliver them out of his hands. You know, the three respond to the king. Or actually, one more point on this. What does he do? He stokes the fire even higher. You know, show his power, to show how great his power is. And that's really still to come. But their response to the king is really, we'll expand on this in just a little bit after we walk through this chapter. They essentially say, there's different versions as to how this is said in verse 16. We do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter, is what New American Standard says. But essentially, they're saying, it's not even worthy of a response to you. We are who we are, believing in God. You know, and as we read on, we get it laid out even more for us. You know, it's he does know them. He does know the Jewish people. They may be even saying, you know, it's amazing you're even asking us this question, Nebuchadnezzar. Because we have a confidence in God. We have a confidence that he's going to deliver us. You know, verses 16, 17, and 18. Even if he doesn't deliver us, we're not going to obey you. They're adamant in their belief, which is an amazing part of this chapter, an amazing part of this whole story, the bravery and courage that they face, backed by their faith and backed by their belief in God. And again, we'll come back to that in a little bit. But it is amazing how they respond and how briefly they respond, and that they're confident in their God, that they're going to be delivered by God. And even if they're not delivered by God, they're still not going to obey and not going to do what he's asking them to do, which is to worship their gods. And they are cast into the fire. He wants seven times the amount of fuel loaded up on that fire. Maybe he's thinking that'll show them. You know, that's going to be equal to how bad they're being in regards to not obeying me. He is absolutely enraged. And you know, he gathers his best men, evidently some select warriors. He asks them to have all their clothing put on, their hats, their clothes, you know, all their coats. Could be that that's going to have them have a greater amount of suffering when they go into the flames. They won't die immediately. It'll be more difficult to on them. They'll die more slowly. And they're bound. They're bound so that they couldn't move around, possibly. They couldn't try to resist once they're thrown into the fire. Again, it's showing his strength. Nebuchadnezzar, his power, his strength and confidence that he's going to do them in because of their rejection of him. And we know that there's a little collateral damage, of course. Somehow, some way, they were cast in, but yet these mighty men, these warriors, died as they were throwing them in. We don't know any more than what it tells us right here. It's possible that could have been God's doing. He could have controlled the heat so that it went out. Because they were probably as arrogant as Nebuchadnezzar. They were probably excited to be able to be a part of that, throwing them in. Maybe not. I'm not sure I would have wanted that duty, actually. But They did die as they cast Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into the fire. And of course, the miracle is what follows here. And it is interesting is we get this through the eyes of Nebuchadnezzar. He's astounded. He stands up, responds to his high officials. He uses the word we. Evidently, the council was involved also in this judgment of these three men. It sounded like it was just Nebuchadnezzar. But he said, was it not three we threw in to the fire? We don't know if he's astounded that they're walking around, or is he really astounded by the fact that there's not three, he says, but there's four loosed and walking about in the midst of the fire and without harm. And the appearance of the fourth is like the son of the gods. And so again, this is through his eyes. And of course, his reaction is to go and to he goes near the fire, it says, and calls to them and asks them to come out. And of course, his temperament's changed. He said, servants of the Most High God, you know, come here. And they came out of the midst of the fire. It is interesting. They didn't come out until that time. They evidently were displaying the power that God has over that fire, because it says they walked about. They walked about inside of the fire. And really, I put a little separate slide to this because all these people were there. I sometimes think maybe that was an incentive for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to go ahead and go through with this. God would be with them possibly because this is an opportunity to show his glory. All these idolaters were there from all these nations. Who knows how many? And they all witnessed this miracle. And also, the arrogance of Nebuchadnezzar to defy God. They knew God, and they knew this might be an opportunity also to say, God will take advantage of this. God will take advantage of this. He will deliver us. And that's exactly what he did. And the detail is one of these things that makes it so clear that it was of God. Their hair wasn't singed. Their clothes didn't smell. Yet they were loosed from those bonds so they could walk around. And everyone witnessed that. Everyone saw it. They saw the power of God. And of course, Nebuchadnezzar was we'll go to this next slide. The miracle exposed how wrong in every way he was. His faith in this God that couldn't speak and couldn't talk and couldn't do anything. Because that's over there in the field over there somewhere. And all at once, everyone realized what a waste. What a waste. This was the true God. This was the true God. And they saw this miracle performed in front of them. And the things he says here, it's specific. The same Nebuchadnezzar that was so enraged, and he blesses them, basically. And recognizes that he sent his angel, is what he calls now, and we don't know. Some think that was Jesus Christ, and delivered his servants. Of course, an angel also was involved with the interpretation of the dream, right? Or sorry, the closing of the lion's mouths, and delivered his servants and put their trust in him, violating the king's commandment and yielding up their bodies so as not to serve or worship any god except their own god. So here's a man whose mind was clouded with rage, who has a clearer picture of things. And we don't know about Nebuchadnezzar. He is referring to them as their god, not my god. So I don't think that was a conversion in any way, but he's recognizing God's power and God's strength in a specific way, and how God did what he did. And these are the verses. I'm showing this again because this is how we'll look at this lesson and make some points on it that can be applicable to us. And there's so many. We could have had those three men read and we could have gone home because of the encouragement of the book. But as is our custom, we're going to talk about it a little bit, right? What can we take? And if this was a class, we could go around the room, and many of you would have input on this. What can we take from their example? And these are just some ideas that I had. One is very obvious. It's hard to read that. I'm sorry. It says fortitude, you know, courage in the face of danger without hesitancy. They were so resolved about not complying with the king's edicts. You know, that wasn't even in the picture that they were going to be worshiping this image. That's what's seen, I think. You know, there's only three verses where they speak at all. All this story about Shadrach, you know their names. I appreciate you guys with getting those names. You know that it's just amazing that they and I lost my train of thought. Sorry about that. But get back on track. And we talked before about Nebuchadnezzar knew the Jews, and he knew how they felt about worshiping false gods, and but they were gonna stay with their plans. A second point. What they didn't do is very interesting. Again, Rick talked about you know, we got to hold our tongues sometimes. And they didn't break out into any passion. They didn't talk about this idolatry that was taking place. They just simply stated what their duty was. They didn't, you know, insult Nebuchadnezzar. They didn't question how they were being tried and being told they were going to go into the fiery furnace. You know, they weren't not seeking martyrdom. They just stayed on the course of obedience to God. They said, we're not going to worship this image. Whatever is going to happen to us, we know this. We're not going to worship this image. And but they kept their temper, basically. They didn't call the king a tyrant or an idolater. They were very calm and sedate in their obedience as they gave the king their answer. They didn't need, you know, to get together and contrive how they were going to word their response. They didn't, it was simple again. They were advocating for God in this case. They didn't try to compliment the king. You know, the schemers earlier, you know, oh king, live forever. You know, that's how they approached and they're scheming to try to convince him. There was none of that with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Their duty was first. They didn't care about how things needed to be worded in this regard. Same thought in some ways. They saw the sin. And they knew the letter of the second commandment about graven images. It was plain to them. It was plain that this was something that they could not be involved in. They could not do. When they said, you know, we don't even need to give you an answer here, Nebuchadnezzar. We know what we're doing. You know, their answer really is that they were resolved that they were not going to comply. And they came to that conclusion immediately. And, you know, they when they looked at the sin and the contrast with obedience to God, it's almost like, even though this was a matter of life and death, that was almost a side thing to them. Because it was so clear to them, there wasn't any room left to question whether this was right or not. It was so clear. And it's an application, you know. If we see a sin and it's manifestly evil, you know, how quickly do we reject that? How quickly can we reject? They rejected it with indignation, really. They rejected it They were abhorring the idea that they were going to get involved in this idolatry. They didn't pause with it. We learn from Christ when he said, "Get thee behind me, Satan." The attitude that needs to be evident when it's so clear that something is as wrong as it was, that's an example we get from them, I believe. And they stated in 17 and 18, you know, we don't know what's going to happen here, but whatever happens, we believe in God. We're dependent on God to deliver us from whatever is about to happen in this case. Hebrews 11, 25 and 27, it's a reference to Moses. And he said he didn't fear the king. He didn't fear Pharaoh because he had an eye to him that is the invisible. You know, in faith, it's the assurance of things not seen. Hebrews 11, again and again, talks about believing in a God that we can't see. That's what those heroes of faith all did. And that's what they're doing here. They see God and his faithfulness in this setting out here where there's a lot of threat to them. And another way to look at that, you know, they're saying, you know, you've got your gods, Nebuchadnezzar, but we're not atheists. We have a God too. And he's someone we can call on, who we serve, who we work for, who will be there for us and protect us, provide for us and reward us. And we're assured this God will deliver us in this situation. And whether he will or not, we're not going along with serving your idol. It's as simple as that. It seems to be the what was behind their faithfulness. And even beyond that, you know, ultimately, even if he didn't deliver them out of their hand, you know, Nebuchadnezzar can only torment and burn them for so long, and then they're gone from his hand. He can't hurt them anymore. And I think this thought also can carry us through suffering in the same way. God's going to deliver us. He'll either deliver us from death or he'll deliver us in death. Is the ultimate control that Nebuchadnezzar didn't have, that God does have, even when something this severe happens. And so their resolve is so great, no matter what the outcome is. And it's so much bravery to say that to the face of this king. Don't care about the golden image. And they were not ashamed to tell him that to his face. And you know, they never considered, and I'll give you some examples, things they could have done or could have said, and we wouldn't be reading about them today. These are just some supposed things. What they could have said, you know, he's not asking us to renounce our God or not to worship our God. He's just asking us, you know, do this one thing. And we could do it, and you know, in our hearts, we're going to secretly detest it, but we'll avoid death if that's the case. They could say, we'll declare our sorrow after we do it, because we're not going to fall into steady idolatry. You know, we're in a situation where the king has absolute power, and, you know, we're under that power. We're subjects to him in this foreign land. You know, if we do this, bow down to it, it's purely by coercion. And, you know, that really would serve to excuse us. You know, that wasn't a thought. And what about showing gratitude to the king? What about all the things he had done for them? He preferred them over others. He rose them to high positions of power, fed them well, you know, and he was their benefactor, really. Maybe, you know, it's kind of stretching a point of consciousness, but let's go ahead and do it for him. And, you know, they're in a strange country. There was actually part of the judgment in Deuteronomy 4:28 that they would be serving other gods. They probably were aware of that. They could have thought, here we are in this foreign land. It's what we're supposed to be doing. They could also thought about their own leaders in their own land, because back in Judea, Israel, their fathers and the princes had set up idols, temple worship. You know, the tribes for a long time, 10 tribes, they're worshiping in Dan and in Bethel. So are we going to be better than our fathers in this? And here's even one more. You know, if we were to comply with this and bow down, that would save our lives. And we could keep our places, and we'll be in a capacity to influence and do a great deal of service to our brethren here in Babylon. And, you know, they're young men, so they could be around for a while. But obviously, none of those thoughts changed their mind because of the simple commandment of God that they're not going to bow down to any image and not worship them. They knew that they must obey God rather than man. And they resolved rather to die in their integrity than to live in their iniquity. Their, you know, brethren back in their own land, they were worshiping false gods by choice. And here in Babylon, they're not going to worship to them, even if the gun's held to their head, so to speak. And, you know, their steadfastness, we saw that earlier when they refused defile themselves with the king's foods. And in many ways, you know, that was an exercise of their discipline. And it probably helps us also when there's smaller things, so to speak, and we show a steadfastness and obedience to God. When something greater happens, we've got to be resolved never to worship images and never to hold anything in idolatry in front of God instead of God, or to be aligned with people who do the same, really. Those are some points. There's many more, but in bringing this to a close, there's other places that talk about fire, and we're not going to be out on the fields with someone telling us to worship an idol, but that's not really why this lesson's here for us, because we will be in the fire, and we have the same principles in place. Isaiah 43 says, when you walk through fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you. It's interesting. That's exactly what happened in this case. They were not burned. They were delivered by God. And also, if you're not a Christian, another picture that we saw here was when they were in that fire, there was no smoke smell on them at all when they left out of that fire. The miracle was clear. But those bonds were loosed. That was a miracle of God, I do believe. And salvation in Christ is also a loosening of those bonds of sin that sin has over you. And you know, we'll still have fires. We'll still walk around in this world. But God has power. We don't. To help us get us through those fires and to mitigate the pain and suffering that we're going to endure for his sake. And in Hebrews 11:34, they're not named, but they talk about by faith all these individuals, you know, Abraham and Moses, they're named. But there is a passage that says, who through faith quenched the power of fire, right up there with close the mouths of lions. And if you're not a Christian, this is an opportunity as we get ready to sing to show your faith in Christ and to be a part of his kingdom, because without that you don't have those bonds loosed, and you're in the power of sin and not in the power of God. And if there's any who would like to come forward, then they can do so as we stand and sing, Who Will Follow Jesus.